your leadership skills and deliver results even amid a new and much more complex terrain. Your success with a big leap suggests that you have the skills, acumen, and temperament to make the biggest leap of all to the highest levels of senior management and even to CEO. Over a third of the sprinters had made big leaps. Roughly half of those leaps occurred during the first 8 years of their career. These leaders proactively sought out opportunities to take on a new large challenge before they felt fully prepared or ready. Christine's experience included two big leaps. The fitness company that she joined in an entry-level training role was growing quickly and opening up new centers. She first moved from an entry-level training role, where she was teaching existing store employees how to sell customer memberships, to running the Midwestern region P&L, leapfrogging the next natural promotional step as a district manager to run a small cluster of citywide centers. She got the job running a region thanks to her own initiative. At an annual meeting, she had met the VP of operations whom she admired, and she thought, "That's who I'm going to be." She sought the woman out and told her of her career aspirations. Once the division had learned that as a trainer, Christine had already gone beyond her formal duties to support the opening of new centers, the head of operations decided to give her the chance to run a regional P&L when a role opened up. Christine shared, "I said to myself, what have I gotten myself into? Our mission was to grow revenue per center. Customer conversion and retention were low, and costs were high. I was scared, but I learn well on the fly, and I went in and said, we are going to be the top-performing market at the conference next year. I actually made my team role-play walking on stage to get the award." Christine's region ended up as the second-highest-performing market in terms of revenue per center, and they did get to walk across the stage and collect an award. Her success during the leap paved the way to her becoming a field vice president. Then, in another leap, 4 years later, she took on a CIO role without having any technology background. As Christine recalled, "I learned that the business speaks a different language from the technology group, and you don't really realize it until you are in it." One of the benefits of leaping to new functional places is a deepened appreciation of the broader set of functions that any future CEO will need to manage. Robert Hansen, the CEO of the jewelry company John Hardy, also credits a big leap for fueling his career success. Robert came from humble beginnings. "My lack of economic security was a real driver for me. I didn't want to struggle." He won a scholarship to St. Mary's College, a small liberal arts college in California, but his liberal arts degree wasn't enough to attract offers from the top consulting companies. So he took a job as a research analyst at a small regional firm. His big leap came later, working for Levi Strauss. He was over-promoted, as he put it, to run the Levi's brand in Europe as its president. His promotion was the result of a conversation he initiated with his boss about how he could have a greater impact on the organization. The European brand was Levi Strauss's marquee division, and Robert was surprised when he received the job. But he took on the challenge. "To run it at such a young age was surprising and terrifying," he told us. "There were 9 country clusters, 22 countries and cultures, and even more languages. That moment was one of the most transformational experiences I've had as a professional." There were parallels to the CEO role. It was lonely. There were fewer advisors. The business was oriented more externally, all of which were new to me and great preparation for later. Honing his decisiveness and ability to engage for impact, he tapped mentors and stakeholders to make up for his lack of experience. And he delivered. In 3 years, he moved the brand from an 11% decline in revenue to low-digit growth. Krista Ensley, the former CEO of the software firm Abilla, has a career arc built largely from a series of big leaps. Krista is one of those rare CEOs who plotted every move of her career with her ultimate destination in mind. At the age of 12, she had announced her intention to become a CEO someday. She attributes making her biggest leaps to having the guts to ask questions and confront being uncomfortable. I have this theory that everyone should always feel a little bit outside their comfort zone because it means you're growing. That discomfort is completely natural. Moving out of her comfort zone included an early shift from marketing to leading product management. I pushed and I pushed and I pushed. Moving out of that marketing role into product management and owning something really set my career into the trajectory that it went in. The product management job prepared her to run a small $23 million division selling financial software systems to nonprofit organizations. When the company decided to spin off the division, Krista was the natural choice to lead it as CEO. She was up to the challenge. She raised capital from private investors and added an acquisition of a similar-sized competitor, improving market position and doubling the employee headcount. As CEO, she tripled the business. Our point? If you see a big leap opportunity, seize it, whatever your experience or fears. Better yet, don't sit around waiting for it to appear. Go seek it out. DIY Big Leaps. It doesn't take a promotion or luck to practice your stretch potential. Here are ways you can make your own luck. Seek out cross-functional projects at your company to learn more about departments such as sales, marketing, IT, accounting, etc. Get involved in the integration of a merger. Volunteer to lead or participate in a top priority business initiative. Ask how you could best contribute to the business. Ask your boss for additional responsibilities, especially those that will add to your skill set. Proactively look for and solve problems before you are asked. Make a habit of saying yes to greater opportunity, even if you don't feel ready. Seek out relationships that are broader or more senior in your customer organizations than what is customary for someone at your level. Look at your personal life as a way to practice big leaps and build new skills. Take on civic leadership roles from city government to the school board. Volunteer in a leadership role or even form a new nonprofit. Look for public speaking opportunities if that's a big development area for you. Career catapult number two. The big mess. Often the best opportunity to accelerate your career comes in a seemingly unattractive package, what we call the big mess. About 30% of the sprinters we studied had led the way through a big mess. It could be an underperforming business unit, a failed IT implementation, or a recalled product. It's a big problem, and the person who solves it will prove her ability to reliably deliver where someone else failed. To clean up a big mess, an executive must have the ability to figure out what's broken, decide how to fix it, and then flex her engage for impact muscles to rally others to deliver results. Often there's significant time pressure to fix the problem. The company or the part of the company she is responsible for is in crisis. Decisions must be made quickly and under pressure. Learning to lead through the uncertainty of such chaos requires the courage to take risks, persevere in the face of adversity, and set a path without a clear playbook to follow. When we asked our interviewees about how to develop the behaviors critical to CEO success, a majority of them mentioned leading during a crisis. As Alyssa Villanueva Beard, CEO of Teach for America, put it, I don't think people know what they are capable of unless they have put themselves in the toughest situation. You have to dig deep to figure out, ultimately, what am I about? What are my values? Large companies known for grooming strong leaders such as GE, Pepsi, or Danaher deliberately use big messes as an opportunity to develop future executives. They give relatively inexperienced but talented executives underperforming or broken business units to see what they can do. Many of the CEOs we advise recall handling a big mess as a big turning point in their career. Strong CEOs, it turns out, are forged under pressure. You don't need to wait to be tapped to take advantage of a big mess opportunity. Go find it. A CEO we'll call Bruce found such an opportunity from an unusual source, a newspaper ad. A large metropolitan county on the West Coast had posted an ad searching for a chief administrative officer for the city government version of a CEO. This was a $4 billion county with 20,000 employees, and it was bankrupt. Bruce smelled an opportunity to make a mark. At the time, the former Marine was on the executive track at an aerospace and defense company. He had job offers within the company to move up, and recruiters were calling as well. But Bruce felt that the VP jobs he was being offered would move him much too slowly toward his ultimate goal of running an enterprise. So he applied for and was offered the job as the county's chief administrative officer. While there, Bruce engineered a total financial turnaround, adapting the playbook as he went under the intense scrutiny of the local press. To generate the much-needed cash, he privatized trash hauling services, despite fierce political blowback and even death threats. Bruce redirected funds from administrative costs to programs benefiting taxpayers. For example, keeping middle schools open in the afternoon to provide safe spaces for kids and quintupling the budget for initiatives to combat infant mortality. Over 2 years, Bruce took the county from junk bond rating to a respectable A-, enabling it to borrow money on much better terms. His success won him a spot in the County Taxpayers Association Hall of Fame, as well as C-level employment offers. Today, Bruce is the CEO of a Fortune 500 technology services company. Navigating a big mess is a good testing ground for all four CEO genome behaviors. It is an especially great way to hone decisiveness. No one knows this better than Shanti Atkins, a litigator turned CEO. Shanti was eking it out as an employment lawyer when the firm chairman, knowing her interest in technology, asked her to help build a related business, ELT, a technology company focused on compliance e-learning. Shanti dove headfirst into product development and market positioning while doing her day job as a lawyer. In 2000, the bottom fell out of the market, as it did for so many companies during the economic meltdown. ELT lost its last round of funding and went through three rounds of layoffs. The company was on life support. As Shanti recalls, "I was one of 12 people left when I was offered the CEO role. It was an environment of extreme volatility and stress, but I was young and naive. My answer was an unwavering yes." The task was to find a buyer for the assets of the business and essentially wind it down. "But I became obsessed with the product and the potential. You should have seen my apartment. Storyboards and ideas on the product were everywhere. I was consumed by the idea that we did not have to close this down, that the product was good and the market was there. We had just suffered some execution errors." Ultimately, she did a complete restart of the company and grew the business from almost nothing to more than $100 million. Looking back, she says, "I like to make decisions quickly, which is funny being a former lawyer, but it comes back to the crisis. Being early on in a crisis gave me an opportunity to practice that skill of rapid decision-making." Shanti applied a decision-making rule. "If I had to decide in 30 seconds, what would I do?" The pressure of a crisis changes the perceived cost of getting any one decision wrong, plus there's no time for indecision. One tactic for those who feel they've been overlooked for the most plum assignments: take the job no one wants. This is the job that no one considers important until you see and realize the potential to make it amazing. It's the tough job that no one wants to risk his or her career on. Often during a big mess, management hierarchy gives way to those who step up, opening up opportunities that otherwise wouldn't present themselves. Career catapult number 3. Go small to go big. Smaller companies often offer opportunities for a faster career trajectory. Incoming CEOs at large public companies, on average, have had 4 to 6 more years of experience than those coming in to run mid-size and small businesses. Going small as a career catapult can also mean starting something new within an existing company. Roughly 60% of the sprinters we analyzed had taken a smaller role at some point in their career. Many of these were starting something new within their company, or in some cases, stepping out to join a new business. It is an invaluable opportunity to build a product, division, or company from the ground up and show a transformative difference in performance. In this environment, one often gets responsibilities much faster than in a more stable environment. And later, this gives the CEO candidates an edge over executives and managers who have worked only within a predictable hierarchy or structure and never had to build a business system and process. Damian McDonald was a rising star at Johnson & Johnson. As VP of Global Marketing for Ethicon, the world's leading surgical supplies business, he re-energized growth of the business from a tepid 1-2% to the industry-leading 3-5%. He had a great boss who was also on the fast track and was respected by the most senior executives. Life was good and getting better. Impressed with Damian's performance, his boss saw him as the likely successor and had explicitly told him he was in the running for his job. Who wouldn't be happy to hear that? The trouble was, Damian didn't want to succeed his boss. I looked at his general management role and knew that was not what I wanted. A $50 billion company, Johnson & Johnson was a sprawl of divisions, departments, and stakeholders weaved into a corporate matrix of Byzantine complexity. Damian wanted to be CEO of a $300 to $500 million business that could move and change direction with the agility of a race car, rather than that of a transatlantic cruise ship. Damian left Johnson & Johnson for Zimmer, a company that was a fraction of the former size with none of the prestige. He took over a struggling $250 million spine division, which delivers surgical solutions to enhance the quality of life for spine patients. It was a chance to learn how to be a general manager and to show that he could deliver, which he did. His division achieved 12% year-on-year growth, performance good enough to win him a position as a group executive and corporate vice president, leading a $1.5 billion group of dental consumables companies at Danaher, widely regarded as a training ground for future CEOs. Ultimately, Damian's willingness to take a job with a smaller company paid big dividends. In 2016, he was made CEO of the medical technology company LivaNova, headquartered in London. Christine's Go Small catapult came when she asked for the opportunity to run an online business within her fitness company. Many competitors were beginning to build a strong online presence to sell fitness products, but the online business at her company was unprofitable. "I was making a decision to go to something smaller," she told us. "It was scary. I didn't know the space well, and I had to learn it." Christine became a master of building performance metrics, repeatable processes, and standard operating procedures, the machinery of reliability. "I knew immediately we had to find a way to make the business scalable," she said. "I needed some sort of system, and I had to create it." Because she was learning a new online business model, She strengthened her ability to adapt by reaching out broadly for input and advice. She consulted functions outside her organization, such as the corporate finance team or the marketing department, earning a reputation for being more inclusive and outward-looking than her peers. She called colleagues in similar industries who were already selling online. "I just reached out. I picked up the phone and called Boston Market and The Gap and learned by visiting their call centers. I learned from other industries. I had to force myself to look at it differently," she says. "We got it profitable." In fact, she'd quadrupled the business's revenue by the time she moved on. Vyomesh Vijay Joshi, president and CEO of 3D Systems since 2016, kickstarted his career by going small in his early years at Hewlett-Packard. In 1993, he was a well-regarded R&D manager running large labs in San Diego and Barcelona with over 200 R&D engineers focused on large format printers. At that point, an expected and safe trajectory would take Vijay to run a larger team. Instead, his boss, Antonio Perez, then a senior general manager at HP and later CEO at Eastman Kodak, offered him an opportunity to build a business from scratch as the operations manager for multifunction printers. All-in-one printers are commonplace now. You might have one at home. But in the early 90s, they represented new territory for HP. The role had barely anyone reporting to it and offered no guarantees of success. Vijay thought hard about this risky step, which on the surface looked like a demotion or at least a sidestep. He ultimately took the role, attracted by the opportunity to build something new and to make an important contribution to HP. Vijay was no stranger to taking risks. In his early 20s, he'd sold everything he owned and come to the United States to get a master's in engineering, despite the vehement disapproval of his family. Vijay recalls his first minutes in the new country. "I landed at the JFK airport in New York City. I was thirsty. I see a water fountain, and I have no idea how to operate it. A woman showed me how to operate it." Much like the risk of coming to a new country, the risk of taking on this off-the-beaten-path assignment paid off for Vijay. He built the multifunction printer business from scratch to $100 million. He repeated this success by building out a home imaging division for HP, again from scratch. On the heels of these successes, in 1999, Vijay took a big leap with a promotion to run the $9 billion inkjet business. By 2001, he became executive vice president in charge of the entire $19 billion imaging and printing group. His professional ascent culminated with his appointment as CEO of 3D Systems, pioneer in 3D printing, in 2016. The small, risky role launching multifunction printers back in 1993 became a powerful catapult for Vijay's rise to the top. Blow-ups, curse or crucible? Career catapults can be risky, to be sure. Careers that elevate one to senior ranks often come with big blow-ups, a failure that goes beyond a meaningful mistake. Typical blow-ups that we came across ran the gamut from getting fired to overseeing a financially disastrous new initiative to making a high-profile bad call. Slightly fewer than half of the CEOs in our sample experienced a blow-up in their careers. Surprisingly, these blow-ups had no apparent negative effect on their likelihood of being hired or their eventual performance as a CEO. Inspirational speeches extolling the virtues of risk-taking are a staple feature in university commencement addresses, career advice columns, and mentoring conversations. We have all heard successful people decades older than we are cheerfully recall their painful experiences in the rearview mirror from the safety of their present-day successes. We also often hear nightmare stories from our friends living through the anguish of career disasters. How does one know which risks to take and how to handle blow-ups to ensure they become a valuable learning experience and not a career disaster? Here are a few guideposts. First, having several different kinds of blow-ups in a career does not disqualify you as a potential CEO. Having the same blow-up over and over does. Second, the earlier a blow-up comes in your career, the lower its cost. And most important, when it comes to acquiring leadership skills and getting selected as a CEO, it's not so much the blow-ups themselves that matter, but how you handle them. How you handle blow-ups is critical to your success in any leadership role. CEO assessments we have analyzed reveal two common mistakes. First, CEO candidates who talk about a blow-up as a failure are half as likely to deliver a strong performance compared to leaders who see setbacks as opportunities to learn. As we described in Chapter 2, avoidance of the word failure isn't spin for these CEOs. It reflects their genuine attitude. Errors aren't fearsome embarrassments, but inevitabilities that provide the most reliable laboratory for future improvement. The second mistake we see too many potential CEOs make is hesitance to take ownership for a blow-up. In our interviews, they deflect ownership and instead point to external factors or blame others for failures on their watch. Our data shows that candidates who blamed others reduced their chances of being recommended for hire by a third. So what do the best candidates and CEOs do? They look facts in the face, they own their mistakes, and they reflect actively on what they have learned and how they adjusted their behavior and decision-making to minimize the chances of a blow-up occurring in the future. Ann Williams Isom is the CEO of Harlem Children's Zone, a nonprofit committed to ending generational poverty in Central Harlem. She's won praise for her leadership, no easy task, given that she followed the organization's much-loved iconic founder, Jeffrey Canada, into the role. Anne is genuine and straightforward. When you sit down with her, you quickly sense that she cares deeply about what she does. Her childhood was chaotic, but guided by a courageous single parent. Her mother was the first African-American immigrant nurse at Long Island Jewish Medical Center. The family endured a lot of setbacks. Can we pay the oil bill? Can we get the kids to school? Anne has lived through some tough moments and difficult circumstances. She didn't hesitate to share her biggest blow-up with us. While reporting to Jeffrey Canada as COO, Anne was the person in charge for what could have turned into a tragedy. It began simply with a conflict between two seventh graders. Normally, an incident like this would be handled by the principal and after-school workers. After getting an early update from the principal, Anne had assumed the situation was being properly handled by the staff and left for the day. Unfortunately, this time Anne's team was unable to de-escalate the conflict. Adults who knew the girls showed up at the school ready to fight, turning the situation from stressful to dangerous. Anne wasn't on site when it escalated. Shortly after, she got a tense call from the CEO telling her the situation hadn't been resolved. Anne went back immediately and was able to contain and ultimately resolve the crisis. It all ended well, but to Anne, it felt like a very close call. Anne felt the children's safety was unnecessarily jeopardized because the staff had encountered a situation for which they were unprepared. In hindsight, she saw that she severely underestimated the risks in that moment. Instead of letting this mistake hold her back, Anne seized the anguish of the moment to learn valuable lessons that made her a stronger leader. First, it was a lesson in contingency planning and risk mitigation. Going forward, she became obsessed with asking questions to anticipate risk. Second, she learned a lesson in ownership. There are certain moments, safety risks being chief among them, when a leader needs to be on the ground. Today, these lessons are embedded in her leadership and in the operating rules she has set up for her team. Anne is the perfect demonstration of how a blow-up, approached with a learning mindset, becomes not a blemish to be hidden, but an important leadership building block. Extracting lessons from even the toughest experiences has made Anne the leader who earned promotion to CEO of this lauded institution, one that is successfully transforming nearly 100 blocks of Central Harlem. How to catapult without crash landing. Catapults are a high-risk, high-reward approach to career choices. So how do you ensure a catapult propels you up, not out? Align supporters. Taking risks with people who have witnessed and invested in your success improves the odds that if you fail in a risky assignment, it will be interpreted as an outlier and a valuable learning experience on an otherwise strong trajectory. Align senior management on the risk involved. Get multiple perspectives on the probability of success. Make sure it's clear to key senior people, including 1 to 2 levels above your direct boss, that you are taking an extraordinary risk for the benefit of the business. You've agreed to take on a big challenge, and there will be value even in the lessons learned from potential failure. Ensure you have the resources you need. Assess and secure the budget and talent you need to deliver, and ensure you have authority to make the decisions necessary to drive results. Stay connected. Stay actively engaged with your network, even if it isn't immediately relevant in your current role. Regular communication and consultation with senior players will help ensure there are no surprises and help you identify the next role when you are ready to move on. Making the right career choices is only half the battle in terms of career advancement. You can excel on the CEO genome behaviors and achieve every career catapult, but if no one notices, it doesn't count for much. The relationships and visibility you build with the right people in the right way matter as much as the results you achieve. In the next chapter, we break down the mechanics of how future CEOs got noticed. Key takeaways. 1. Optimize your career choices at each stage. Stage 1, first 8 years of your career. Achieve breadth and rapid pace of learning. Stage 2, years 9 to 16. Demonstrate measurable results. Stage 3, years 16 to 24. Become an enterprise leader. 2. Deploy career catapults to accelerate your trajectory. Big leap, big mess, go small to go big. 3. Own your blow-ups and turn them into learning opportunities. Stay connected to your supporters as you undertake the career catapults. 4. Conduct an annual CEO readiness assessment looking at your mastery of 4 CEO genome behaviors, your portfolio of experiences against typical CEO requirements, catapults that can help you accelerate your path. Chapter 7. Stand Out. How to Become Known. Lieutenant George. I don't like blowing my own trumpet. Captain Blackadder. You might at least have told us you had a trumpet. Blackadder Goes Forth, BBC Comedy. We didn't want to write this chapter. The cornerstone of our work is a focus on performance and outcomes, not on claiming credit or working your network. But the data and our own experience forced us to be honest with ourselves and with you. The formula for getting on the CEO shortlist is not get great things done and hope somebody hears about them. Instead, the key is get great things done and get noticed for them. Getting to the top seat is the output of 2 mutually reinforcing factors, getting results in the right roles and getting noticed for those results. This is true for any coveted position. We live in a crowded world. There are likely 5 other qualified people standing next to you for any prized job opportunity. Performance is a necessary but not sufficient ingredient to getting on the short list of finalists for a CEO position or most other leadership roles. One of Elena's favorite stories about reaching the CEO seat is the journey of an Australian executive she met 3 years ago, whom we'll call Christopher. Elena assessed Christopher for a CEO role in 2014 and was impressed with his well-rounded profile across the four CEO genome behaviors. Having spent his career in product businesses, he wasn't the right guy to lead the turnaround in a services business Elena assessed him for, but she walked away convinced that Christopher was ready to become a CEO in a business that was a better fit with his strengths. That CEO search had been Christopher's first experience on the shortlist, and for a while, to his great frustration, it seemed as if it might be his last. Like everyone who is a stone's throw from the top, he's a driven high performer with a wealth of experience. Christopher had started in sales at a leading global consumer products company and then made a big leap to running a P&L at another firm. He moved his family to Europe for more international experience. Finally, he moved to a company with a reputation for its business management systems, where he led a division with more than $1 billion in revenue. Christopher had delivered impressive results, mastered the CEO genome behaviors, and made a lot of the right career moves. Yet he was stuck, and his shelf life as an attractive CEO candidate was nearing its expiration date. Boards are wary of candidates who have been in striking distance for more than a handful of years, but never got the position. At his current employer, Christopher was viewed as a high-potential leader. But the current CEO was about his age and had no plans to retire. His wife, who was his biggest supporter and co-strategist, started thinking the problem might be that he didn't look the part. She pressured him to get his teeth fixed and straighten up his posture. At breakfast in New York one day, surrounded, Elena will admit, by attractive, well-groomed men and women in expensive suits, Christopher somewhat bashfully asked Elena what she thought. Was his wife right? Were his teeth really to blame? Did he simply not look the part? Elena shook her head. "Good teeth are not your problem," she told him. His relief was palpable, until she told him he had a bigger, harder problem, but one that was equally fixable. "You've built a strong track record, but how much time are you spending getting to know people who could actually hire you for a CEO job?" Christopher, like so many talented mid-career executives we see get stuck, and many who get stuck even earlier, was working double time on one part of the equation, getting results in the right roles. He had underinvested, however, in getting known by the people who could get him to the next job. Even straight white teeth weren't going to solve that. At this stage of Christopher's career, he was still lacking what we found to be a key bridge between senior executive and CEO. All of the CEO candidates we meet, who are on the shortlist, were visible to the right people, those who are making the CEO decisions in the right way. We'll return to Christopher later. Interestingly, we didn't find any sign that they were overtly working to get noticed. In other words, these people weren't aggressive self-promoters seeking attention for its own sake. They weren't name-dropping or bragging about thousands of LinkedIn endorsements. They were building relationships to deliver results for the good of the company, not their own self-interest. They created visibility with the right people in the right way. We have distilled a set of tactics that, with time and intentional practice, deliver that 1-2 punch. Visibility with the right people. 1. Pick your boss. No one has more control over your visibility and success in an organization than your boss. Glenn, a COO we met several years ago, learned this the hard way. When he learned he was on the shortlist to succeed the CEO of his company, he stopped nurturing his relationship with his boss, the incumbent CEO, and shifted his attention to the company's executive board. Eager to show that he deserved the top job, Glenn began to operate unilaterally and often openly criticized his boss's decisions. The CEO, as you might expect, noticed and eventually lost faith in him. "You have the talent to be the next CEO," he told Glenn, exasperated. "It is unfortunate that you are always breathing down my neck. You are so ambitious that I feel like you are my rival, not my successor." Instead of the nod from the board, Glenn got the boot and was out of the company in a year. He saw himself as a corporate hero hamstrung by an insecure leader. He might have been right, but being right didn't get him any closer to his dream job. Obviously, across the arc of a future CEO's career, not all relationships with one's boss will necessarily be strong. On the other hand, when we look at those successful in attaining executive roles, they tend to have positive relationships with many of their bosses. These leaders are able to avoid the two most common pitfalls of the employee-boss relationship. One, they hold their own, even engage in conflict, without their bosses feeling attacked. And two, they distinguish themselves in the organization without leaving their bosses feeling upstaged. Your best protection from both of these pitfalls is simple. Do your diligence up front, and to the extent you can, pick the right boss. When that's not an option, make sure that every suggestion you make mirrors the language of the organization's goals, and better yet, your boss's goals too. Make your boss your collaborator. Of course, this can be difficult when dealing with a boss who is ineffective, is mean, or has a strong need to control. In the following, we share the best tactics deployed by successful rising leaders who have made the most out of even the toughest boss situations. Understand your boss's goals. What does success look like to her? How does your role fit into that? How can you best support her? What are her career goals? What motivates her? Know which individuals in the organization are most important to your boss and look for ways to get her noticed by them. Don't guess his or her expectations and preferences. Ask. What are her top goals for your work? How does she prefer you communicate with her? And don't just ask once. Priorities shift over time. For example, you might turn in a project a day late to double-check the numbers, assuming she expects perfection, while she needed to make a quick decision, even if the data wasn't perfect yet. A good way to make this conversation less abstract is to ask about the best direct report your boss ever had. What made him or her so great? Let your boss help you. Keep your boss looped into your career goals and connect your interests to the organization's. You want to keep these at the top of your boss's mind, so that when your boss is in a meeting and your dream assignment is mentioned, your boss has both the knowledge and the motivation to say, "You know who would be great for that?" and name you. On the other hand, if your boss hears you're considering a job opportunity in another division without consulting her first, you can turn a fan into a critic overnight. People who see themselves as being invested in your success want to be consulted and involved in your important career moves. Master the regular update on the things that matter. Send a focused update on where you are on your boss's top priorities with respect to your work. The appropriate time frame and medium for these updates will vary depending on your boss, company, role, etc., but the consistency shouldn't. The message to get across is, "I understand what's important to you and to the business. I'm on top of it. You can count on me." Some people go to work to please their boss. Others show up at work to get the job done. Neither of those is the same as saying, "How do I help this individual above me achieve the goals for the enterprise?" That's the secret to making your superior your sponsor, someone who can introduce you to opportunities or pull you up with him as his star rises in the organization. We are not advocating that you become a sycophant or a political operator. We are suggesting that you genuinely seek to support and collaborate with your boss to achieve her objectives, yours, and the organization's. If you find yourself in a situation where your boss is intractable and not aligned with the goals of the enterprise, the best medicine is to actively make a move to another role. In assessing candidates, getting pulled by bosses into bigger and bigger roles is a common sign of high performers that we look for in making a strong recommendation. It tells us as much about a candidate's ability to engage and manage relationships as it does about his ability to perform. 2. Build your tribe. We found that in addition to strong relationships with bosses, almost half of the sprinters we studied had powerful sponsors throughout their career. Sponsors are those individuals, often people more senior than your own boss, or residing in other parts of the organization, who have the influence and the access to open doors and introduce you to valuable opportunities. Support from an influential sponsor can help accelerate you in an organization. Why? Sponsors take action, provide valuable access, and effectively lend you their credibility. And therein lies the challenge. We know we need sponsors. The importance of sponsorship has become a perennial topic of leadership development articles and career advice blogs. But the advice typically has limited value for those who need it most, because not everyone can access a sponsor with equal dexterity. However, sponsors often throw their weight behind the people they see as one of us. What does all this mean for anyone looking to break into an opportunity where they find themselves in the minority? Some might advise that they cloak themselves in the clothes or hobbies of the in-crowd. We are more intrigued by the CEO candidates who have creatively and proactively created sponsorship on their own terms. Instead of trying to become what they are not, they are resourceful and deliberate in their quest to connect in ways that are true to who they are. Natalie Kogan, CEO of the wellness company Happier, attributes a fair part of her success to creating sponsorship on her own terms. Natalie emigrated to the United States from Russia at age 14. With barely any English, she survived the terrifying social and academic challenges of American high school thanks to an adroit ability to read people and her environment quickly and to find points of connection. In the suburbs of Detroit, she had to walk into the cafeteria her first day as a student and figure out which kids were going to be the least mean. Identifying the friendlies was half her strategy. The other half was to adapt her approach to the audience. Telling teachers, "My English isn't so good, can you help me?" had a reasonable success rate. Telling teenagers the same thing? Crash and burn. She found she had more success bartering. "I'll give you my math notes if you give me your English notes." With high school students, notes had currency. Humility did not. Later in her career as the only female managing director at the New York-based VC firm Hudson Ventures, Natalie realized she could cut through with humor to build bridges with her sports-talking colleagues. She told us that earlier in her career, her husband would prep her on sports news so that she could go in on Monday morning and have something to say. But she woke up one day and said, "This is not me. This is fake. This is not what I want to do. And I realize that I connect with humor, and it works for me." Younger and mid-career professionals often lament that they haven't been lucky to find powerful sponsors in their career. Rather than passively waiting for your luck, you can proactively create sponsors. First and foremost, sponsorships get created by great performance. Beyond that, we offer a few tactics to help you get noticed and cultivate sponsors. An important word of caution before you try these at home: The tactics that follow bear fruit when they are grounded in real performance and genuine attitudes. If you try to fake your way to getting noticed, it will cause flameouts instead of fireworks. Share your aspirations, not problems or issues, with potential sponsors. This creates positive energy and demonstrates that your goals are aligned with the business's and the sponsor's objectives. Ask a potential sponsor for advice on topics relevant to her. If you want someone to feel invested in your success, give her easy opportunities to contribute to it. Advice is a powerful sponsorship-building approach. Most people enjoy giving advice, and the very act of doing that encourages them to be more invested in your success, not to mention the value of the advice itself. Close the loop later by letting the sponsor know how the situation played out and how her advice helped you. Make clear, specific requests that are easy for your sponsor to fulfill. For example, if you want to get more exposure to senior clients, asking the head of sales is a lot more fruitful than going to the head of manufacturing. Give sponsors your genuine gratitude. Acknowledge anything they did that helped you, no matter how small. Thank them for advice or an opportunity, and share how that's made a difference. People tend to do more of what earns them positive recognition. Senior people are no exception. When you ask for a sponsor's help, don't drop the ball. Follow through. For example, if she makes a requested introduction, don't let the email sit. Take the ball and run with it. Bring rare goods. One way to break into closed networks and attract sponsorship is to offer new, needed skills. One of our investment clients works primarily with people the firm has known for decades. However, as they look to infuse cutting-edge digital practices into their business, they are beginning to court new partners, purely because these individuals bring a needed skill. Invest in building valuable expertise and become known as the expert. 3. Build a bonfire. One of Elena's mentors at McKinsey, Kurt Strovink, once sat her down for a talk. "You are doing good work, but not getting the reputation you deserve. You are working with a partner in media, then for another partner in financial services, then on to London, then back to work on a consumer project. It's like moving to a new town every few months. You are not going to build a strong support network that way." Kurt told Elena to imagine that she was looking at her career from a spaceship. "You're setting a million little fires in different places, and who cares? Instead, what you need to do is build a really large fire that can be seen from space. Then you'll get a real return on your efforts." "Pick a village and build a bonfire," Strovink was saying. "Stop flitting from place to place, throwing off sparks." At some point in your career, intentionally focusing your relationship-building efforts is critical. The key is to decide where to invest your time and energy to build a critical mass of relationships that help you stand out. A great way to gain exposure well above your pay grade is to take on a staff role with a senior person several levels above you. This can be an effective early career visibility booster. Often, operational leaders eager to run their own P&L overlook corporate roles such as chief of staff roles or director of strategy. Yet those roles can provide both built-in visibility to senior leaders and unparalleled insight into how successful leaders operate at the top. Even if you are in a smaller company that might not have staff roles, volunteering for important cross-functional projects outside the boundaries of your job can increase your exposure. Christopher, the CEO aspirant we mentioned earlier, was told he was crazy when he left marketing early in his career at Merck in order to take a staff job as a business improvement manager. High flyers wanted to move up the ranks in marketing and sales. The business improvement function was part of the much less glamorous operations team. But he guessed correctly that it would broaden his view on the business, his skills, and his network. As a business improvement manager, I had the ability to roam around the company to help fix things. Thanks to this role, I learned the business and all of its different functions much better than did any of my peers. Because I was leading improvement initiatives that were important for the business, I got to know my boss's boss. Christopher discovered it gave him instant visibility within a very influential village. That job gave me more visibility to senior leadership than anyone thought, he says. You have much more oxygen to feed the flame when you're working at an intersection where you can add the most value and contribute what the organization values most. If you give a heroic effort to some IT project in the basement, or 20 IT projects in the basement, in an organization that lives and dies on sales, no one's going to care. Getting known organization-wide is much harder when you're working in a function that's considered an also-ran rather than a primary driver of the company's success. If you find yourself in an also-ran function within an organization, you've got to take the risk to make a lateral move to broaden horizons, or you may even need to leave the company for one where your expertise will be more central to the company's priorities. Vyomesh Vijay Joshi, whom we met earlier, president and CEO of 3D Systems, learned this the hard way early on in his career. Vijay was eager to get a promotion from R&D section manager to R&D manager in the imaging and printing group at Hewlett-Packard. Vijay had met all of his goals and was known as a good colleague. Going in for his performance review, he assumed he'd receive the promotion. To his shock, he was passed over. Disappointed, he went to the head of his business unit to better understand what had happened and to learn from his career hiccup. My boss gave me incredible advice that I share with others to this day. He said to me, "At your level, to get promoted, it's not enough just to check the boxes and meet expectations. You need to make a contribution that moves the needle for the company, something that is visibly and meaningfully core to what drives value." This led Vijay to embrace a thorny challenge within the crown jewel at Hewlett-Packard at the time, the printing and imaging business. The market for printers was stagnant, despite the counsel of many around him that the probability of success was low. Vijay knew that making a difference in the heart of Hewlett-Packard was exactly the contribution that was needed. Between 2000 and 2008, he built the platform for growth by winning the low end, leveraging scalable printing technology, and connecting printers directly to the internet, which allowed the company to build subscription-based models. The fruits of his labor were stunning. He grew the printing and imaging group from $19 billion to $28 billion while improving operating profits from 10% to 16%. What initially was a disappointing setback became a valuable career lesson that helped Vijay focus where it mattered most and paved the way to his CEO seat at 3D Systems. As you build a bonfire, you have the best shot of being noticed when people can readily answer yes to the question, "Is this person known for something important for the business?" For example, getting involved in a major initiative to change the business, such as M&A, is an excellent opportunity to both hone your skills and raise your profile. This applies whether you happen to be on the side of the acquirer or the company being acquired. Acquired executives get exposure far above the level they would normally have in their own business. If you are on the side of the acquirer, leading merger integration is a crash course in understanding the entire business and puts you in regular dialogue with the most senior people in the business. Visibility in the right way. 1. Ask for what you want. There's one thing that will help you be noticed for the right opportunities, and it's ridiculously simple. So simple that even some of the most competent senior executives we know fail to do it. You have to ask. Few things are more important in accelerating your career than asking for what you want. Those on the path to CEO or leadership roles of any kind show confidence and conviction by doing exactly that. Almost 60% of sprinters we studied took the initiative and at some point in their career proactively asked for their next responsibility. Here are a few representative